Hey, everybody. Welcome to a brand new episode of Hey Man, It's Okay, a men's mental health podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Sky Bridges.
Hello, everybody. I'm your other host, Ryan Heapy, a licensed therapist out of Newport Beach, California. And today we have a very special episode. We are joined by the one and only Josh Cutler, who is truly the glue and the catalyst, I believe, for the Hey Man, It's Okay podcast. He put Sky and I together after our serendipitous introduction between me and Josh at our psychedelic assisted therapy training in, I think it was Santa Monica or some Hollywood or somewhere down there in LA. And it was one of the more special weekends I've ever really had, I think, in my life. And actually, another serendipitous moment, the same band that I saw the night after our training that ended on Sunday, I went straight to a concert that was just down the street, my favorite band, Rufus Du Sol. I saw them again on Saturday. And oh, wow. So it's been 3 or 4 years, I think, since then. And man, just I'm still coming down from the high of that show. It was just so emotional and so beautiful. And I had so many memories from that amazing weekend that I initially met Josh. So welcome to the show, Josh.
Hey, Josh. Thanks for coming on, man.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. It's great to be on the pod. And I've been a friend and a fan from the beginning. And it's been really exciting to just see how this has grown. I remember talking to Sky early on about the vision, and then I had met this cool guy that was a therapist in the Santa Monica, and I was like, oh, you should talk to Ryan, maybe you guys could do something together. And I was focused on some other things at the time, and so it's really great to come full circle and get a little bit more involved now as a producer and help behind the scenes. But I do appreciate the opportunity to share a little bit about my story and why I'm here. This is a topic that is near and dear to my heart, and it's a labor of love for you guys, I know, to put this out. It's a lot of work, and so I'm happy to join the team and shoulder a little bit of the burden here and keep this train moving forward.
Yeah, great. We're so excited to have you as part of the team, and however much you can help out, we're really excited to see that. But this podcast really wouldn't exist without Josh's intervention, because I had the first iteration of the podcast with a different co-host, and then that kind of fell apart, and Josh had introduced me to Ryan. Ryan was a guest on my first iteration of the show, and man, then we've just hooked up, and I've got to hear your story on how you connected. Josh, I met you in 2022 for a motorcycle ride that I put on for suicide awareness, so that was really cool, and then I got to get your expertise, your knowledge, your connection to Ryan. And I got to benefit from that. And I'm so thankful because here we are today, a little while later.
And the funny thing is, those of you don't know it from wherever you're listening, but Sky's and I live like a mile apart. I almost feel like I should be over at your house next to you.
I know, I was just thinking that.
Like when we put that together and that motorcycle ride that we met, I remember just like I showed up. I know I was late. And
so late. I almost left without you.
I know. It's like he's this asshole showing up on his BMW motorcycle, making us wait.
In a pink helmet.
In a pink helmet. Yeah. I just had to make a statement. It was a little flashy, I guess. But I just remember immediately our first interactions, even that before that, but this guy is cool. It seems like the people around him are really cool and good folks. And we took a ride up to my island, Whidbey Island, where I grew up, to the north end, to Deception Pass. And so that was just really special for me to, it felt like going home with some new friends.
Yeah, that's awesome. Josh, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, about your professional background, and maybe a little bit about your book and how that came about. And let's get to know you a little bit. Let's dive deep into all things Josh Cutler.
Oh, how much time you got? We might have to put Ryan on the clock here. I'm not careful.
Sky was pretty good there. My first question almost for every client when I do an intake, the very first time I meet them when they sit down here is, so who is Josh?
Yeah, I like it. That's a definitely an interesting question right now. I'm remaking myself a little bit, emerging from a difficult few years. I don't know, starting with some professional identity. I'm a licensed clinical social worker. I've worked in healthcare for about 20 years in a mix of clinical and leadership roles. And I have worked as a therapist for, I don't know, probably 15 years or so, and private practice for about 10 years. Mostly it was always a side thing, but something, my dream was to be full time in it. Like Ryan, I just kept getting pulled into some of these jobs in bigger healthcare that the allure of the benefits and the salary and the action, which was mostly just a lot of emails. But I did get the opportunity to do some big stuff with some big budgets behind us. So that was cool, especially during COVID. One of my favorite projects was building a mental health service for healthcare providers. So for doctors and nurses and staff of one of the biggest health systems in the country, we were able to ultimately reach people in 7 states, and like over 100,000 people had access to our service. So that was really cool. And I was the manager for that, and also one of the clinicians. And you guys mentioned my book. I wrote a book a few years ago called The Day Hospital. The first edition was anonymous because I was early in my career and moving up the ladder a little bit. And I had this story I wanted to share, but I didn't know if I wanted to put my name on it. So I self-published it. What's that?
When did you write that?
It was 2021.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I was just thinking, putting your name, as the stigma of mental health kind of goes away little by little, just even 4 years ago, I think it was a little harder to maybe put your name on something than it might've been today.
Yeah, that's a really good point, because actually in the middle of COVID, everybody was talking about mental health. And I decided at that point that I wanted to write another edition that I added a couple chapters to, and I did put my name on it and told everybody about it and promoted it and had some great speaking opportunities here in Seattle and for some other podcasts and whatnot, and ended up feeling really positive about having it out there. Yep, there it is, The Day Hospital. So talking about my experiences with clinical depression, and my little brother has schizophrenia, and that's really impacted my life pretty significantly. That was part of what got me into the field. And that's an ongoing challenge. He's pretty disabled, and my mom does a lot for him now, but my brothers and I are going to be the ones end up, you know, looking after him in the long run. And so you get to hear some of my thoughts and wrestling with all that. And so, yeah.
Did you go straight from college into your master's, or did you have another career at the beginning? And maybe some of the other interesting reasons that might have drawn you towards mental health at that time?
Yeah, so I dropped out of college a couple times. I went to the Evergreen State College in Olympia, go Gooey Ducks. And I
for those of you non-Washington people, yes, that is the way you pronounce it.
It's not Geoduck, yeah, even though that's how it's spelled. And I ended up, I was like working at Taco Del Mar, which is, I don't know if they have them in California, but it's just like it's Chipotle. And I had wanted to work at a smoothie place, but nobody would hire me. So I got but I like tacos too. And I had moved in with my girlfriend, but I was a college dropout. I was an honor student in high school. I was always told I would go to college. So it was always like, I got to finish college. But I was a little gun shy because I had some pretty tough experiences with depression in college. And then I was looking for another job, and I got this job at this group home for people with developmental disabilities. And they also had some mental health issues, so autism and other intellectual disabilities. And I worked there for a bit. And then before long, the manager went to go become a police officer, and he was like, "You want my job, basically. I don't think anybody else wants it." And I was like, okay. And somehow I was able to work in some projects and do some internships through my work and finished college. And before long, our little nonprofit group home agency had merged with a larger group, and they tapped me to be one of the directors of a pretty big program. And I was like in my 20s. And at that point, Mary and I had gotten married, and what seemed like a good opportunity for me. But I did that for a couple of years. It was all Medicaid funded, and most of the folks were on Social Security and had legal guardians and 24/7 care. It was a really intense job, and basically had a lot of entry-level people taking care of really vulnerable folks and being responsible for that and having the state overlook it. So when I count my healthcare experience, it definitely goes back to that, because that was, we were given meds, taking people to the doctor, doing positive behavioral support. And I think it also just gave me some really good experience working with people like in challenging circumstances. And that was, though, after a couple of years, I was still in my 20s and I was like, I don't think I want to keep doing this. I had this idea I maybe wanted to be a therapist or do something else in social services. So that's when I decided to go back to school and get my master's in social work at UW.
And Josh, like me, you have an uncle that's a therapist.
That
was probably also a bit of an inspiration, or maybe planted an idea somewhere along the way.
Yeah. Yeah. And you guys actually met him because he was at my house and you guys were on screen and he said, hi. Yeah. My Uncle Joe, my dad's older brother, really good guy.
Shout out to Uncle Joe.
Shout out to Uncle Joe. And he'll be tickled by this. We always liked each other, but after my dad died, I dared you guys to make me cry, and I didn't think it would happen so soon. After my dad died, he's just been really there for me, like present. Like, we talk on the phone probably every couple weeks. Like, we just had a family wedding that we went to, and he was just really awesome about him and his wife spending time with me and my girls. And then he came and stayed in Seattle with us. And I think if I've learned anything about mental health and what helps people get better, it's relationships. It is the people, and it is the good people. People have a lot going on, and
sure,
people are complicated, and some people aren't your people. That's fine, whatever. But if you can find your people and the ones that, you know, reciprocate, do not let them go. Do not treat them like gold, because you are going to be down.
I imagine your uncle spending time with you, I bet he gets a lot out of that too. I'm sure you remind him a lot of your dad, and missing his brother is probably really difficult for him. So I'm sure that's a mutually beneficial thing for you guys to be so connected like that. And that's, thank you for sharing that. And also, there's no shame in crying, man. Not at all. Please cry anytime you want.
Sky and I are pretty close to being undefeated on getting our guests to shed a tear.
All right. Yeah. Yeah. And also, he's a therapist. He's a licensed clinical social worker and worked for a big health system down in California for his whole career, but has always had a private practice and has always been, my dad was always like a university vice president, was a little more of a mover and a shaker. And I always felt like that's the direction I should go in. And my Uncle Joe is just always kind of slow and steady. And now he's alive and he's got his house paid off and he's been married for freaking ever. My dad was divorced 3 times. And I'm just kind of reevaluating, like, maybe he's not the boring one. Like, he's got to figure it out. He's got a pension. What is that? Yeah, definitely good to have some good folks. And so I was sharing the story of the book, and it was great to put it out there. I've got, I guess, a fair amount of reviews on Amazon now, and I've sold a decent amount of copies, but it's not a bestseller by any means. But I realized
maybe
not until after this, but I realized after I put it out and had been promoting it for a while and then moved on to other things, like, that's not really what it was about. It was about sharing my story and owning my story and being open with it. And I also realize most people don't read, but they think it's cool that you wrote a book. And then the people that actually did take the time to read it, and it's a little bit intense. It's talking about mental health, and there's definitely some sad parts. It's not for everybody. It's like being in my head. It's a little scattered at times.
But I can definitely say I know you a lot better after reading your book and your wife.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about
it. Yeah, what she deals with. Yeah. But I did also notice that it really helped my confidence, because it was like I didn't have this secret that I was holding on to anymore. And also, people thought it was cool that I wrote a book. So I, you know, got a big promotion at the health system I was working for, because my boss thought that was really cool. And I think there was other reasons, but
that's nice.
I don't think it hurt, right? So I indirectly, it paid off financially and otherwise too. And you just never know sometimes, especially as an artist and as a writer, sometimes I struggle with the word artist. Some, whatever is your creative thing, whether it's making a podcast or a book, you don't quite always know where it's going to go or take you.
Yeah. So now that we've talked about your history a little bit, you've worked in a lot of big healthcare systems, small healthcare systems, private practice. What do you think from all of these different areas, what would be the biggest barriers for access for men and their families for the healthcare system, since you've been all over the place?
It's anybody that's tried to access mental health care knows that it's challenging. And I think for men in particular, it starts upstream in that we don't even want to go, right? I remember the first time I dropped out of college, I came home and I didn't get out of bed for a week. And my mom was finally like, we're going to the doctor. And I was just like, I went kicking and screaming. And I didn't want to talk about that stuff. And it's not like I'd never seen a therapist before or something, but it just... I think for men in particular, we have the challenge. There's just a further stigma of suck it up. You're fine. Just move forward. You need to get help. And so I think having these conversations in places that men already are is important. One of the coolest jobs I had is I worked in primary care for a couple of years, or actually more than a few. I was full-time as a clinician. And then I was a director for a program after that for a couple more years, but to work with the primary care doctors, and they could just like, somebody's having a hard time, they could be like, hey, we got a guy here. He'll come talk to you right now. You don't gonna need to go find somebody. And I would just pop in and we talk. And usually they'd follow up with me one or two times. And sometimes I'd refer them out, and sometimes not though. Often it was just talking about something that was just totally overwhelming to them in that moment. And a lot of times you're not seriously mentally ill. Yeah. You're not going to get thrown in the hospital. People have this huge fear that I'm going to get help and I'm going to end up in the hospital. That can happen. And some people need to be in the hospital. I have been in the hospital personally, but for most people, you're just up against it and you just can't see around it. And maybe the people in your life aren't seeing it either. Mm-hmm. And you need to talk to a professional. And so I think, whether it's podcasts like this or that primary, men do sometimes go to the doctor as I'm entering middle age and getting my blood pressure checked and whatnot. I do go to my physicals, and it's a little bit safer of a place than say just going to the psychiatry office or something. And it'd be really easy to talk about all the issues around funding, what a mess, and getting health insurance parity that is really parity, and paying mental health professionals like professionals. That's definitely something I'm passionate about, and really smart people are working on that, and might be something I'm going to work on again. But right now I think creating spaces where men can have these kind of conversations, and that's a big part of why I'm here. I think what you guys are doing is cool. Like I checked out for a year and then I came back and I was like, whoa, they kept going and they really are like at the next level now. This is awesome. And we had Sky over and my kids were like, we want to make a charcuterie board. And I was like, oh, he's going to think I'm whining and dining him or something. But he's just like, hey man, I want to be part of it because this is cool. And these are the types of, and we don't need to debate the merits or issues of the manosphere. There's a lot of toxic masculinity out there. And I think there's also a lot of opportunities for positive masculinity. And that's where we start with positive mental health. And I don't know if this is, that's exactly the answer I thought I would have given when I started grad school, when I was like, I'm going to change the system and be the best therapist ever. And, but I think creating more opportunities for men to have real conversations and give hugs to each other is good.
I think there isn't one of my male friends that I don't hug when we say goodbye to each other, at least, if not more. Like, to me, hugging is one of my love languages. I hug everybody. I walk through Pike Place Market and I hug everybody, guys, girls, whatever, because I just have no shame in showing that I really care for people. And if more of us did that, we'd have a lot less stigma on sharing your feelings like that. So thanks for being honest and vulnerable and doing what you're doing too, because we think this is pretty cool also. We love doing what we do. We get to meet so many cool people from all over the world and all different types of professions doing all different types of things to help move mental health forward. And that's how we create this network. We've got to grow this network, and that includes bringing cool people in to help with our team when we think we need help. And I was honestly, I was just waiting for you to ask me, Josh, because I always wanted you to be part of this. But then you had to deal with your stuff, and I respected that. And I was just waiting for you to be ready to come and join up.
Thanks. Speaking of my stuff, and I've got a really long story that I'm not going to tell you right now, but it starts with two shirts that say trophy husband on them in Vegas and the car keys to a Ferrari and me picking Ryan up saying, you want to drive out to the Hoover Dam? I had gotten in a really bad motorcycle accident not long before that. Broke my shoulder, hit my head pretty hard, and had surgery, recovered a bit from that. Went back to work, and I just wasn't myself. And honestly, I don't even remember most of it, but I have heard, and I don't think my wife will ever let me forget it. I was pretty out of control, and what ended up ultimately being a pretty serious manic episode that I came to understand was more than just a typical one, because it was related to a head injury. So it lasted longer, and I had some other factors going. And as these mood states go, after I was way up, I was way down, and I was actually back at that bridge that this guy and I had ridden to, and got a phone call from my wife, who told me immediately I had to go to a hospital, and I did. And that call saved my life, and ended up hospitalized a few times, and then went to some residential treatment down in California. Ryan came to visit me actually down in San Diego, took the drive, and that meant a lot to me, Ryan. I think about that sometimes. The people that will visit you in the psych and residential home, those are your good friends. But
when I was in myself after my attempt, that was also probably the most, and having that support, having people care for you, especially when you're in a place like that of such despair where you don't believe there's really any reason to keep going. You don't think anybody cares for you. You, for the most part, most people who get to such a place believe that they're taking burden off of most people. And so a lot of times those immediate, or just those people who would be willing to show up, even if it was close, even if it was only a 10-minute drive versus an hour and a half drive sometime. For me, it was also probably an hour and a half for people to come see me. And man, so a lot of those pictures that I have are really meaningful.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you, Ryan, for coming to see me. And that continued. I'd had depression before, but it wasn't like this. And I came to realize later when I got treatment for my head injury, as I talked to those doctors about it, they came that this was a much different experience. And it wasn't my first head injury either, but I was really severely depressed I just didn't get out of bed basically for a couple of years.
Could you, or if you want to, if it's okay, describe maybe what it's like to experience mania or a manic episode? It's always something that's so fascinating to me, that whether through a head injury, stress, sometimes it's induced maybe with other people, possibly because of substance use, but it's really like a completely different state of mind. And for people who experience any kind of bipolar, it's just so fascinating to me how the brain just takes this drastic shift and really changes almost your entire personality in a lot of ways. And it's not something that the individual has all too much control over. Correct me if I'm wrong in any of that.
No, that's all true. And I had certainly experienced some milder hypomania prior to this and definitely some depression, but I'm severely bipolar now. That's what's on my chart. And it's a little weird to see that. I get nervous when I see new doctors, I gotta think, but my doctor had said that it was what I experienced was like, it was like the lid came off. Like when I hit my head, mm-hmm. I've got my motorcycle helmet on here. I can show you how banged up it is from that accident. But she just said, you had these issues before maybe, but it just, the lid came off. And it doesn't feel necessarily great. Like all the time, there's a fair amount of restlessness and irritability. And for me, I think the feedback I was getting from other people, like I was having some issues at work. Suddenly they're just like, why are you being so jokey and casual in meetings with executives and stuff? And my boss pulling me aside and my wife being like, why are you spending so much money? And so I was also angry a lot too. So that could be part of me. Yeah. It's almost like this kind of hyper masculine. And at baseline, I think that I've developed a healthy confidence, but I was suddenly ready to start a big counseling business and wanted to recruit all these therapists on the side of my already busy full-time director job, and had some money in the bank that was coming in. I was making pretty good money at the time, but it was like, I have money and I'm going to spend all the money. I'm going to rent the fastest Ferrari that was ever made. And I did. And I'm going to buy trophy husband shirts for me and Ryan. And I did. And
it was a little terrifying. It was, the car ride was a little terrifying.
Yeah, I had that song, Big Dick Energy, on repeat, I think. It was ridiculous. Like, it was, it's almost a parody describing it. But
that sounds like a really fun adventure.
Yeah. And, but also, I always had trouble sleeping, but it was a particular challenge with mania, but also just really disorganized. And part of why I ended up on that bridge was I was really angry. Like, I was in this kind of mixed state and I was just like, fuck them. I'm doing great. I just had this motorcycle accident. I almost died. I had a near-death experience. I'm living life to the fullest and nobody understands. Nobody understands. And that, I think that was what kind of was the flip for me in the depression when I finally crashed. But it was like, I was just really confused. I don't understand. And that's part of why I need to take lithium for the rest of my life, is that mania is like a high dive and the view is amazing. But once I'm up there, I'm gonna crash and I'm gonna hit.
Yeah.
Ground and break into a million pieces. And this last time I had to get electroconvulsive therapy because I just wasn't getting better. And that's the old school Jack Nicholson, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest shock therapy. It really hasn't changed much. They put you to sleep. At least the anesthesia is very good. And I had a long course of that actually was very helpful as far as my depression. It, I would say, cured my depression, brought me back to life, really affected my memory and some other issues, but it was worth it. But I don't want to go through that again. It was frankly a little traumatic. I don't want to spend another minute in a psych hospital, and I don't want to scare people that if they're that sick, they should go to a psych hospital because they'll take care of you. But I want to be home with my kids. They give you these free peanut butter cups at the psych hospital. That's all I remember. But these little, you know,
benefit.
What's that?
It's a benefit.
Yeah, sure. I'm sure they charge my insurance, but that's not where I want to be spending my time. And I'm glad it was there over and over. And so that it's been about a year since I came out of it, but I still am recovering from the brain injury and frankly, the ECT, I don't remember most of the last couple of years, and my short-term memory isn't great, and I get really fatigued, and I've only got a couple hours in me before I gotta just chill out for a while. It's not like the old me that thought I was tired but could charge forward for a long time. Now I'm like, nope. And I'm grateful that I had a job that had good long-term disability benefits. Most jobs don't these days, and I'm having some challenges with it now, so we'll see where that goes. But it's definitely been quite an adventure, and it's something that I'm working on writing about. I think it's an interesting story. Ryan is going to be the highlight of my book in a couple places. I tell the story of I recently came across some chapters I'd written on, I now want to include, but of the time Ryan and I met at the ketamine assisted psychotherapy retreat, and then later how we ended up in this Ferrari in Vegas. And I didn't really have much insight, so maybe I need Ryan's version, because in my mind I was like smoking, I don't smoke cigarettes. I was like missing a tooth at the time. I was like sticking.
That's right. You were missing a tooth.
I remember that.
Yeah.
You were, the hard part is, and I've worked with a couple of clients where I was able to tell they were experiencing mania. But it's very subtle, because you sound the same, just maybe sped up almost when you put the audible at 1.5 times. And like, you were still in many ways enough put together to help me end up in a 4 to 5 month long-term relationship that stemmed out of Josh's hand my number out, I think. And the whirlwind of that trip was definitely something different. But
yeah, I flew 7 people down there. It was,
We had some great dinners.
Yeah, we had some amazing, the tomahawk steak. Bela Biro, little plug, he'll be on here soon. He made an appearance. He used to live in Vegas. Now he lives up here. But yeah, I mean, it's nice actually to have a little time right now to do some writing about the experience and dust off some things I'd written a few years ago that I want to integrate. I'm calling it the lost memories of a recovering therapist. I'm deciding what I want to do next, and if I can do anything more than real part-time. But I'm getting excited about working in mental health again, kind of on my own terms, and have my own practice, and recognizing there's a need, and I definitely have something to bring to it. And I'm different. That's one thing about mental illness. Like, it changes you, but not always for the worse. Like, I'm humbler, I'm wiser, I'm definitely a lot more loving, and I figured out what's important.
Good. I feel like you'll have some really amazing insights to share, just having the education, the experience, the background of being in mental health systems, small and large, working with a client to working with the big systems around the practitioners, and then having to go through it yourself. Yeah, I think there's a lot you could share that would give people a lot of insight into what it's like to experience bipolar mania, depression, and because when somebody is going through it, man, is it disorienting for them? And most people, especially loved ones as well, don't know where to turn, what to do. And so I think you got a lot there to offer.
Yeah. We are at the end of this episode of Hey Man, It's Okay. Josh, I want to thank you for coming on. Thank you for being part of the team. Is there somewhere else besides the podcast where listeners can find you and read a little bit about you and where they can find the Day Hospital?
My website, probably joshcutler.net, or you can find my book on Amazon. I'm on the socials, but I'm no big influencer or anything. I mean, pictures of my dog.
Awesome. Well, that does it for us here at Hey Man, It's Okay, a men's mental health podcast, now a team of 3 people. Thanks for listening, everybody. Please comment, subscribe, share this out to your friends, share this out to your family who may need to have permission to be vulnerable. And that's really what we're trying to do here, is to encourage men to be vulnerable and to talk to one another about the hard things and the feelings, and not just the easygoing, tough, macho man things. Thanks for stopping by, everybody. This is Sky.
Thank you, guys. This has been a real pleasure, Josh. We are incredibly grateful to all that you've already done and all that hopefully will be done in the future. So it's an exciting next step for, I think, the three of us here. So thank you, guys.
Thanks, everybody. And remember, until next time, it's okay to not be okay.